Okay, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil. Our special guest today is new Cincinnati City Manager, Paula Balls Buthing. Looking forward to having her on. Sherry, how you doing?
I'm good today. I myself am looking forward to talking to Paula. Different role. City solicitor is one thing. Typically pretty quiet. City manager, buck stops with this person. So I think this is going to be a great conversation.
Before we jump into that, let's broaden out and talk about a county issue that just kind of came out of nowhere, or at least it seemed like it came out of nowhere last week when the headline is that the Great Parks of Hamilton County Board approved unanimously putting a tax levy on the ballot this fall, 1.8 mil tax levy, which equates to $63 for valuation of every $100,000 valuation of a home, a property tax. Sherry, you've asked around and found out a little bit more about this. What did you find out?
Well, you know, these are for some certain parks projects. I think that we still don't know a lot about what those projects are. I've been kind of focused on really looking at, like, the total money that we're spending. Because I don't think anyone would argue we love our parks here, right? We just talked about this last week. Like, there's just really not a question. We have nice parks here and, you know, a lot of amenities. And so less about that and more about, I think, what the total spend is. Because there already is a parks levy, a 10-year one for that started in 2017, and so that's $35 per 100,000, you know. And then on top of that, it's been a little bit of taxing coming along here. Last year, the county commissioners put in that 0.25% sales tax to help with the budget. And we saw the bus levy, which we've talked a lot about on this podcast, 0.08% of the sales tax. And so I feel like we're just talking a lot of taxes here.
Yep. Taxapalooza continues in Hamilton County. The interesting thing about this, a couple things. It was, if you didn't hear it, I heard it. And if I didn't hear it, you heard it, or we both hear about it. But we didn't hear anything about this, and I think that was by intention. At least that's sort of my read on the situation. Doesn't mean they didn't discuss it in a public meeting, but I feel like there were efforts here to keep this intentionally quiet, Sherry. What are your thoughts on that? What have you heard?
Well, you know, not only us, right? I mean, I didn't see this in other news media. I didn't see any commissioners mention this. And to be fair, this is a board. It's a separate board. It's one that doesn't get a lot of coverage in today's media landscape just because, you know, it's these added boards of like the Cincinnati Parks and the Hamilton County Parks, and these boards make different decisions. I didn't hear any whispers about this.
I mean, I tweeted this out when the news came out last week. And we have a story on Cincinnati.com that it just, the timing of this just couldn't be worse with the economy we're in, COVID, as you mentioned, all the other tax increases. Let's not forget, too, that the stadium tax fund is a mess, and the commissioners continue to have to deal with that. Any read on the politics of this, Sherry?
That there aren't any? honestly, like, first of all, are they not talking about it with, you know, where's the coordination? We're supposed to have, okay, so a lot of places, when you look at other counties, you know, it's easier to understand what the tax burden is, but the way they do things in Hamilton County is like, well, this year it's a parks levy, and now this another year is a zoo levy, and maybe this year we'll do a children's service levy. All very important, so I'm not going to argue with, I don't want to say that, right? In whatever you think about these levies, right? But the idea is that, you know, we put a priority on these things in our county, but you can't tell if you look in a bubble of here's your ballot in November, and do you want to pay a parks levy? Most people don't understand they already pay a parks levy, right? And they're not looking at that. They're like, yeah, I like my parks. I'm going to pay for them. Or yes, you know, I want to help foster children. Or yes, I want people to be able to ride the bus. It's up to our elected officials to put this all together and understand this for people. It's why they're elected. And that's really what I'm not seeing. I don't want to weigh in whether this is a good levy and that's a good levy or whichever. But the idea of coordinating this, we have a whole tax levy review committee here, which is supposed to look at that and this overarching tax burden. And instead, we just keep hearing, here's a tax, and here's another tax.
Yeah, I'll weigh in on it. And I'll say it's tone deaf. The timing is terrible. Especially the fact that it was a pretty sizable property tax levy that the parks went for in 2016. And like you said, that doesn't expire through the end of 2026. I will say this is interesting. I think this is worth pointing out, Sherry, that, you know, before anyone wants to go jump and say, oh, Democrats, that's not the case here. This is a unique board in that it's appointed by a judge, not by the commissioners. It's appointed by Ted Winkler, the judge, and he appointed the board members. And as far as I can tell, of the names that stand out to me on that board, Republicans. Republican Marcus Thompson ran for Anderson Township trustee last year. Ginger Warner is a well-known Republican donor. Buck Niehoff's former UC Board of Trustees member, and on down the line. And these folks, again, were appointed by a Republican judge.
So, again, that seems like they're probably doing their job, right? Looking around, what do we need to do for the parks, right? And making a decision with that very narrow view in front of them, right? What do the parks need? But I just, this overarching putting everything together, and plus on top of that, putting together things with the city, right? We just saw the city make massive cuts to its operating budget. And could you even imagine if the city raised taxes right now? Like what the outcry would be about that if they tried to, and I'm not ruling it out for the future, by the way, as we kind of go along in a lot of people's second terms. But, you know, the idea of like, everything has to be cutting on the city side of things. And, you know, the parks levy did not pass for the city back in 2015.
Yep.
And so it's just, again, it's this overarching look. I'll be interested in really to see how this plays out. There's not a lot of time between now and the election.
Well, just based on what I've read, Sherry, this appears as if, do they really need this money? It seems like they have a lot of projects they want to do or expansions they want to do, but I'm not sure this is the time for that. Like if there were absolute real, you know, bare bones needs for the parks, then okay, then I think there could be a discussion, but that's not what seems like is at play here. What have you found out?
You know, they don't want to make the parks the best they can be. And I think that's where they're coming from on this. And it's going to be up to the people to decide. And I think you're going to see a lot of reporting on this, like what people are going to get for the money. And that's going to be really where the important things come in. Like, and then we're going to let people make their own decisions on this. And like, what do you think of these projects? And I will say the city tax back in 2015 was very project centric, right? It's like, we're going to do these projects with this money. And the voters are like, no. And they do love their city parks too. And so that is where they made a decision there. It was a shocking one too, honestly. Because we just kind of thought that was going to fail to passage.
Well, we'll be all over this. I'll be writing columns. You'll be writing news stories. Inquirer will be writing news stories. Keeping track of this, watchdogging it. Sherry, is there anything else before we jump over to our special guest, Paula Boggs, and you think anything else that you can think that people need to know about this at this time?
Just that, you know, I really remind people to watch their county levies and such. I think there's just going to be, you know, this huge, I think we're really going to see the, you know, Biden-Trump race, the presidential race, heat up. There's a lot of county races. We've talked about this, you know, a lot prosecutor, treasurer, and sheriff, right? It's going to be a lot to look at and read about this election, you know, but knowing what you're getting for your money, it's too late after. You got to know beforehand, before you make that vote. And so I think I don't want people to forget about this and what promises to be, you know, very interesting election, personality wise.
Well, I'm going to take another stab at this since I went, I believe, 8-2 in the primary.
Ooh, look at this.
And my predictions. And I'm going to predict that this will not pass. Certainly, when you look at how close, and again, it's a sales tax increase with the bus levy. I think when you look how close that was, and it was a Democratic primary is really what drove the turnout. Still how close it was. I think now with certainly a lot more Republicans and independents coming out in the general election, I don't see
city residents are going to be looking at a school, you know.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
And a school levy too. And that's, you know, that's a big portion of the county.
Yeah. As we sit here today, still kind of the news is still fresh, still a lot more reporting and discussions to have. But that's just my initial thoughts on it. Anyway, let's jump over and bring on City of Cincinnati's new city manager, Paula Boggs Music. All right, special guest time here on the That's the Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome in, fresh off her first week as a new city manager of the city of Cincinnati, Paula Boggs Muthing. Paula, how are you?
Hi, great to talk with you, Jason. Doing pretty good.
Great to have you. How was your first week on the job, Ben?
It's been good. I'm spending a lot of time meeting with folks that work in the manager's office and our direct reports to the manager. So that has been interesting. It's always a little exhausting when you start something new and you're trying to understand all of the information that's coming at you. But I'd say it's been pretty good.
You just replaced Patrick Dehaney, who left to go to Virginia Beach. Has it been, is it a pretty easy transition for you, having been the city solicitor for several years now?
I think that the transition has been probably as easy as you could expect it to be. I mean, the city manager's job is a big one, but the solicitor's job is big in a different way. And, you know, Patrick and I were pretty close. And so I think we were well informed as to the duties that the other had to be responsible for. And so I kind of came into this with some understanding of what he did every day, but I will say I am impressed at how much he was able to get done, because I think there's kind of the daily crush that could keep you from accomplishing a lot if you weren't really single-minded about it.
We understand that because you're all of your things kind of flow down. Some of them are newsy, and it's like, but I was working on this, and it's like, I guess I made it today. I'll do this instead. Did Patrick leave you like secret notes and on how to do things?
You know, we sat down for a number of hours before he left to talk through. I think just how the office operates, an overview of what his days look like. And then, you know, we talked through the things that he thinks about, the things that were concerning or were going really well. And that was really helpful.
What would you say is like his biggest piece of advice that you were not expecting?
Well, he told me to make sure that my best friends were not people that work for me.
Oh, you know what? That's always good advice. It's hard to learn. You spend so much time at your job. And Jason and I talk on this podcast. We're really good friends, but we're also coworkers, although we're not the boss. Nor would we want to be, Ray J.
No, I don't. I'm happy with Burl being the boss.
And so that's true. I think it would be hard when you spend so much time at work. It does tend to be like the biggest part of your life.
Yeah.
Paula, you tell us a little about yourself. You grew up in rural Western Kentucky, right?
It's really central Kentucky. Hardin County, Elizabethtown, I wasn't even really in the city proper, but I was in a remote area of the county, and the closest thing to a civilization was Elizabethtown. I grew up there for my entire life until I went to college. And I did live in Japan for a few years, and I spent most of my summers in Japan.
Yeah. Tell us about that. Your dad was career military, and your mom is from Japan. And tell us about your family and how your mom and dad met, and leading up to you living in Japan for a few years too.
My parents have such individually interesting stories. We could do like a whole podcast on their lives. But yeah. My dad, he grew up in Eastern Kentucky, Harlan County, and he joined the military as soon as he could, and was sent kind of all over the world. He fought in Vietnam. He was stationed in Turkey and Germany and the Philippines. And he ended up in Japan, stationed there. And he met my mom, who was a college student who was working a part-time job cleaning. And she was one of the housekeepers for his apartment building. That's how they met. And then, they started dating and they got married. My mom grew up in Tokyo, and she went to Sophia College and was very engaged in the U.S. politics and government kind of, story, different, articles that would come out. She would say that she and her friends would run to the, and they would get out of their classes and run to the newsstand to see what the latest was on the Nixon impeachment. And wow. She's just really enthralled by the U.S. And so, and they got married and moved to Kentucky. And that's kind of it.
And then did you guys move back to Japan then for a few years?
We lived in Japan for about a year and a half when I was, my sister, who's 3 years younger than me, was a baby, and I was four.
Gotcha.
And we lived there. My dad was doing all kinds of different things, and it was like he was teaching English and teaching karate and like doing all this. I think they just wanted to see if they could make a go of it in the U.S. in Japan. And so we were there for a while, and that was really, who knows if you actually remember it or if it's just kind of superimposed memories from pictures and home videos, but it seemed lovely. We were very close to my grandparents, like a half block from them. So, that was a great time. And then that really, when we moved back to the States, that is what kind of served as, I think, the relationship basis for me and my sister to come back to Japan over the summers.
So do you still go back every summer?
No, now that I have, my own kids and family, it's kind of hard for my husband and I to get away for 2 weeks every year. So we have been trying to go every other year. We were supposed to go this past summer, but this current summer, the summer that we're in, this unending year of 2020, and we of course are not able to go. So
have you not,
we can go next year.
Have you not, have your sons never got, how your sons, how old are they now?
11 and 13. Yeah, they've been, this would have been their, let's see, this would have been their fourth trip.
Okay. Okay. I'm like hogging all the questions. I know you've told me this.
No, you're good. I mean, no, because I know a little bit about this since I wrote the small profile of you, but I'm learning more now. It's interesting to hear people's backgrounds.
Well, I've known you for a long time, going back to your days in the Port Authority when you worked for the Port Authority. Yeah. You were the head counsel there, and I remember you telling me your story and background. And so it was your mom who really instilled that politics and government bug in you?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I think she was a big believer in American democracy and the equality that is the promise of this country. And she wanted me to understand what a gift it is and how to make sure that I take advantage of the opportunity I have by having been born in this country.
Yeah. Sherry?
Did you always know that you wanted to go into the political realm, or were you kind of taking like the path of like a legal career?
Well, Sherry, I do want to confess that I did have a brief desire to be an actor. I think all failed actors become lawyers.
Okay.
I don't say all lawyers are failed actors, but I think all failed actors become lawyers.
I feel like you do get a lot of drama in your current job. I don't know if that feeds your soul like the same way.
It's not the same. I did always have an interest in government and politics. As I was deciding what I was going to do after undergrad, having not been a successful actor, you know, law school was really appealing because there is a lot that you can do in terms of making real change as a lawyer. And I was fortunate to go to UC Law and be a member of the Human Rights Program and as a Human Rights Fellow. And it exposed me to a lot of issues that I certainly would not have known about had I not had that same law school experience. I also was able to work at what was at that time Loffman and Gerhardstein. Bob Loffman was the partner to Al Gerhardstein. And I worked in their office for a summer, my last summer. And it was really inspiring. And it made me commit. You know, I had kind of thought I would go into more international type governance roles, nonprofits, and things like that. And that experience working at their civil rights firm really solidified my commitment to domestic civil rights and, you know, social justice type issues.
I did hear that we almost lost you, that you had an amazing job opportunity overseas, as Mary Armour was telling me this story. She worked there, of course, for a long time and helped pick all of those cases that were trailblazing cases in Cincinnati. And so you were going to go somewhere and they snapped you up at the last second. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. I was set to go to Geneva to work at the UN and the High Commissioner on Human Rights in that office. And that was my plan, although I got at the last minute, I was like, oh, I should, you know, I'm in law school. It would be a good idea to get some actual litigation type experience here. Like, this might be my last chance. So the Urban Morgan Human Rights Office, Burt Lockwood and Nancy Ent at the law school, they, you know, started calling Al and Mary immediately, and Mary just, you know, kind of took it over and said, no, she has to come here.
As Mary does. And she's always right.
That's right. I totally agree.
Do you feel like it was a sliding door moment for you? Like, what if you had gone to Geneva? You feel like you might have taken a different path?
You know, I think there's certainly the possibility that I would have been irretrievably committed to non-domestic issues, more international type issues. So who knows?
How did you, you went on to work for KMK, and then did you go from KMK to the Port Authority?
So when I left law school, I had a clerkship working for the Kentucky Supreme Court, and I worked for Justice Keller of the Kentucky Supreme Court for a year. And then I went to KMK, and then I came to the city and was a litigator here at the city. And where I worked on, a number of issues. You know, it was like a dream come true, really, to work on First Amendment cases and a lot of constitutional issues that young litigators don't really get a chance to see. You know, those were my cases. My supervisor and mentor, Rick Ganulin, and I handled a lot of, I think, some of the most interesting cases that the city had seen up until that point. And I also worked on the state land bank enabling legislation. So it felt really good at the end of getting that passed and having the land bank created here in Hamilton County to be able to go to the Port Authority and then, you know, work on setting up the land bank.
Yeah.
What were some of your first big projects with the land bank?
Oh, well, we created the REACH program while I was there, which is kind of their, for the land bank, I think, one of their trademark programs, which is, you know, going into a neighborhood and buying up vacant properties and rehabbing the properties into single family homes to help stabilize the market, which in many cases, you know, there are no comps in the area for new product. And so that was a great project. I worked on the historic theater in the West End on stabilizing that. And it really was a satisfying experience because it's such a beautiful landmark, and to see it kind of, you know, resume some of its glory was very fulfilling. And then, of course, you know, the port itself, that's when they took over Midpoint Crossing, the old Swifton Commons, and tore it down. And, you know, it's kind of sitting there ready to have something amazing built on it. But, I mean, it was a real eyesore. And I think getting rid of that for the community has had some immeasurable impact.
Did you, obviously, working for the Port Authority, working for the city, KMK, all very involved in politics, how did you just get to know John Cranley and Roxanne Qualls and, you know, all the politicians, local politicians through those jobs, or were you just also active, you know, with politics outside of that?
I haven't really been active in kind of county politics or local party politics. I met the mayor through, because he taught a class in the law school.
Yeah.
And of course he was a council member here when I started working here, although I didn't know him that well. And we really, I think, became friends through his working at KMK. You know, he and his wife and my husband and I and would see each other at events and then occasionally get together for, you know, brunch or something. And that's really where our friendship began.
All right. I have to ask, what kind of professor was the mayor? Was he tough? Was, like, tell me.
You know, he's obviously incredibly thoughtful and very, very, it was a death penalty class that he was teaching with Bill Gallagher and very committed to exploring the issues around capital punishment and why we do or don't make those choices in various parts of the country. And I found him to be very interesting and intellectual, and it was, you know, in your third year in law school, you're really focused on what's coming next. And so to have a class that can pull you in and really cause you to focus on new things is very exciting. And so I thought he was very good.
No, and of course he did, co-founded the Innocence Project here. Mm-hmm. And I had an early chance when I covered courts to cover their very first case. And I have to say, it was to see him in court. It was, and they won that case and found somebody some freedom. It was great to watch that kind of passion.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This one, when John Cranley got elected mayor in 2013, and he brought you on as city solicitor. Had you guys talked about that for a while, that could be a possibility, or did he call you up after during the campaign or after he got elected and said, hey, would you like to be city solicitor?
We talked about it theoretically, but really nothing. There was not a job offer, so to speak, until he had taken office and was kind of, I think, trying to figure out what kind of team he wanted to assemble. I always wanted to be city solicitor. I always thought that I could bring a perspective to the law department of someone who had been there and who really cared about the lawyers there, wanted to see them succeed personally and professionally, but also provide, good and fair representation to all the constituent entities that the solicitor's office represents. And it was just something I could not pass up. I was so happy at the port, but, that opportunity was just, it was, and really, I still think that, being the city solicitor is something that has made me, it has allowed me to reach kind of fulfill potential that I thought that I had, but, I wasn't sure about, and I felt very good about the condition I left the law department in, because there are so many talented people there, so many good lawyers, and I think the people who are left to run that department really, Andrew Garth, Rashani Hardin, Emily Warner, they really care about their colleagues, and that's, to me, very important.
Would you call
that? I've heard this many times over the years. There's no, if you're a lawyer, city solicitor is like one of the holy grail jobs. There's every kind of law that you could possibly want. There's criminal, it's civil, it's social justice, it's, improving people's properties. There's nothing that the city solicitor's office doesn't really touch in a community, and there's just so much opportunity there. And I have heard that so many times over the years.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It is a great chance to see all the parts of the city government in operation and to help make some real improvements in the community.
What was it like? I mean, Patrick, I do feel like came out of left field. Although I guess in the second, as much as we were like, Jason and I have been rushing the next election, who's running for mayor in council, like, this is the kind of time where people start, you know, in the second term of someone's administration, maybe taking a different job. But Patrick's still really, him leaving was shocking. I mean, to the first person who texted me about it, I was like, that's not true. I took a couple more texts to sort that out. And were you surprised in, like, that the job was coming your way? And how hard was it to make the switch? Because the city manager job is very tough job.
It was a big surprise. And, you know, I didn't have that much time to internalize it before it was, you know, moving on to the next question, which is, will you assume the acting/interim role? And it is a very big job. Patrick did it very well. It's a tough act to follow. But I feel like he left me in a pretty good position. So,
I mean, I will say, like, for people who don't really know, like, the city manager job, this sounds very wonky, but it's the buck stops here job. Is there a landslide in Columbia Parkway? That call comes to you. Is there something with traffic? Those calls, like, every call in the all hours.
That's right. There's no turning your phone off, right?
That's right.
Paula, the city manager position, as Sherry mentioned, is a very tough job. You can, it's thankless in a lot of ways. You don't get a lot of praise, but you get a lot of blame, and you can get caught in the, you know, in the tug of war between politicians. You know, you're just finishing your first week on the job, but do you have a sense of what your biggest challenge is in the role?
Well, I think at least the way that I look at the job, and I think the way that Patrick viewed it as well, is that caring for the workforce and the employees here is preeminent. That is the first priority. And I think in that regard, everyone on the first floor and the third floor is aligned. So that will continue to be my focus. And I think, you know, there are things where, you know, I may have an opinion on something that is different from an elected official, or, you know, from some other internal or external constituency. And I think that's really something that has to be solved through dialogue. But I think the real work is around making sure that we have, you know, safe facilities, we have enough safety procedures in place, that we are always thinking about, you know, how to keep the workforce safe from a pandemic, but, you know, any other things that the city has to face.
Have you started thinking about, I believe next year the FOP contract is up, and so you'll be in the middle of negotiating that?
I mean, I think, you know, we have a good team in HR and in the law department. They've negotiated that contract in the past. You know, the chief and the assistant chiefs will be helpful in talking through a lot of those issues. And I think, you know, we have had a productive relationship with the FOP, and I expect that to continue. So I know that there's a lot of interest in the FOP contract, and, you know, we want to make sure that we are listening to the concerns of citizens and of course, you know, the mayor and members of council. So I think it will be in the spotlight, but I don't expect the negotiations themselves to be fundamentally different.
Gotcha.
I mean, that seems like it's the hardest part of this job, right? It's the balancing of everybody. That seems like a Herculean task, and some do it better than others. I look back in the past, perhaps, but I mean, how do you approach that? That seems very hard.
You know, I think that there's always a point in a disagreement where you have to kind of take a pause and look at what the issue really, you know, what the issue really is and where the points of agreement are and where you, when you came to the point of disagreement, and think about how to resolve that issue using the template of the points that, with which you agree. You know, in that way, it's not it's not that different from a lot of the lawsuits that we have worked on. So I think, you know, you can't resolve everything, but there is a framework to do that. And the one good thing that is not always the case when you're looking at litigation is that you have people in the city who, when they disagree, it is not because they are adverse to you. It is because they are aligned with you on a bigger goal, which is, you know, looking out for the best interests of the city. And we typically disagree on how exactly you reach that goal. And I think those are the kinds of things that are easier to resolve.
Yeah, we mentioned John Cranley and Roxanne Qualls earlier. Made us think, like, hey, who are your mentors and folks who have really helped you along the way in your career?
Well, Roxanne Qualls, you know, I did not know her personally until kind of after we both left city service. She though was someone I looked up to while I was working here, and she was the vice mayor. She is just such a model public servant, and I've come to really appreciate her, the way that she looks at things, and I've always really looked up to her. You know, Rick Ganulin was a mentor to me in the law department when I was a young lawyer. He is really quite brilliant. There's certainly a streak of radical in him, which I appreciate. And then, you know, I've had just a number of people over the years. Laura Brunner has always been a person that I look to and look up to. And I have so many friends, female professionals who are, I think, you know, inspiring every day. My friend from law school, Stephanie Mose, who is a legal aid attorney and just, you know, is a tireless advocate for her clients, and so many people. But in particular, I would say Rick in this department, Laura, when I was at the Port Authority, the judge I clerked for, Justice Keller, on the Kentucky Supreme Court, who has sadly passed away. He really was also a champion for young women, and Those are people that I feel really helped to direct my career and helped me, you know, think about the world in terms of what is possible.
Have you had a chance to ask anyone for advice?
Oh,
what kind of advice have you gotten?
Oh, what kind of advice have I received since since I came here?
Yes.
To the city manager's office.
The city manager's spot, right. You know, I don't know that the advice I received is totally different from the advice I received when I became solicitor. And I would say the calls that I have received that have been the most meaningful are people that call and say, look, you may need to talk to someone. You may need a friend. You may, you know, need to bounce things off of a person. Like, let me know. And I think just the acknowledgement that this could be a different kind of challenge than I've faced in the past, and support for helping to talk me through those challenges has been really great. And then, of course, my husband is my biggest supporter and champion, and you know, his advice is always, you know, take a breath, before you react, and that's not always
easy. That sounds like my husband.
What I'm trying to do.
All these experiences that you've had and folks you've worked for and worked with, and has it ever crossed your mind to maybe one day run for elected office?
I don't, I guess what I would say is I'll never say never, but that is not something that I find appealing right now.
Yeah.
I think that being an elected official is, it takes a person, a special kind of person. And my friend Kate Schroeder, who is running for office right now, she is like just amazes me at how hard she works. And she has two young kids and a family, and still.
She's running a great campaign.
She really is an amazing person. And if I were going to do anything like that, I would want to be able to do it like Kate does it. And I just don't think I could do that right now.
Yeah.
So I will say, there's recent news that race is being called a toss-up.
That is really,
Scott Wortman really reported on that last week.
Sherry, do you any other things you want to ask about?
No, I mean, just she knows I'll have a million questions as we go along, just in general. Like, the city manager is the buck stops here with reporters, too.
Sherry, that's true.
Great stuff, Paula. Congratulations on the new position. Lot of work that you've done to build up to this role, and congratulations, and thanks so much for joining us here.
Well, thank you. This has been a great conversation. It was fun to talk to you both.
Great to talk to you too. Thanks, Paula.
All right. Bye, Paula. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, thanks again to Paula Boggs Musing, city manager, for joining us today. What do you think, Sherry?
I'm really looking forward to seeing her in the role. Every city manager is different. They all have different personalities. She's coming at such an important time. I'm looking forward to watching this unfold. And I have to say, when we're talking about the different types of city managers, like, she is calm and unflappable, because as a city solicitor, you're going to see a lot. She knows how to deal with everything inside City Hall in a very even and tempered way. And, like, so it'll be interesting to see how things go.
Yeah, no doubt. I know all of Paula's experience in the industry. She brought up the land bank. I was on the transportation beat. The Port Authority falls under that beat, and I got to know her really well. And, I think she's, as we were talking with her, I just really was thinking, like, all these experiences that she's had has really been great to help her build toward this role. A role that's, again, like I mentioned, you don't get a lot of credit, but it's a very, very challenging, difficult work. And, the work she did with the land bank at the Port Authority, I mean, that stuff is, that's hard, tough work that doesn't make a lot of headlines, but makes a lot of impact on making this a better city. And I think that I think she'll do a fantastic job, and looking forward to covering her in the role. All right, let's transition into the fun segment of the podcast. Sherry, I know something's on your mind, because you said you had something fun for the fun segment. What's going on?
I finally did the art climb at the Cincinnati Art Museum.
What is the art
climb? I'm fresh off of it this morning. You can't see me, but I'm sweaty from walk and the climb up those stairs.
Tell us about what that is, and I've noticed I drove by Eden Park, and they've got a right there, what, Eden and Gilbert, isn't it? Where there's a
beautiful
new set of stairs up the hill.
Yeah, you used to have to go like all the way around, like Eden Park, to get up to the museum and that whole area. And they built these just absolutely beautiful steps. And it's just, honestly, the steps are just phase one. It's supposed to be like a whole sculpture garden at some point. And that's a hill, right? To Mount Adams.
Yes, it is.
Mount Adams. They're so well done that you just, you climb a segment and then there's a little, turn and you climb another segment. And you just see the city like more and more as you're climbing up with just this absolutely gorgeous view. Like, I can't wait to do it in the evening too. It's perfect.
They basically go from right there at the intersection of, is that Eden and Gilbert? And that,
yeah, so you're kind of like across from the Baldwin building. Instead of having to keep going straight and curve up in like Eden Park to go up, the stairs are right there, like off the street, and you can climb right up and there you are.
And when you arrive at the top, that's the museum is right there.
Exactly. And, I have to say, I wasn't alone. There were people of, we were talking about Snail Park, there was every age, just very diverse. And also, they're just a very different athletic abilities of like, mm-hmm. Some people were taking it slow and leisurely, then there was like a guy, like, these might be our new Rocky steps. I was like, just really running up and down them and, running circles as it was taking my time. I think he passed me awesome. 3 times.
That's good stuff. Did you, is there like an outdoor plaza there at the art museum that you arrive at when you get to the top of the stairs?
It was kind of the parking lot and I had to do this. So on a future day, I want to do more like keep the walk, like going up there. But I just kind of climbed back down and went through downtown, and then, then there's the work day. But I can see like going earlier and spending some time up that way too.
I'll tell you what, Mount Adams, I don't want to get down a rabbit hole, but Mount Adams is just such a gem of a neighborhood. I don't go up to Mount Adams very much, even though it's like right there. I was just up there a couple weeks ago at Mount Adams Bar and Grill having lunch. Every time I go up there, every single time I go up there, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm in Cincinnati. I've always had that feeling, living in Cincinnati for years and years and years. And every time I've gone to Mount Adams, I'm like, you just feel like you're in a different place. What is it about that?
That's very true. And I'm finding that about East Chrysale too. You're just looking at these old homes and the hills. And I have to say, as much as I miss doing all of the things I did pre-pandemic, discovering all of these outdoor things has been such a silver lining of things and really exploring the neighborhoods. And I talk to a lot of people who are doing the same thing, or I see, tons of people like walking and outside, and less vehicle traffic, on a Friday morning, I think people would have been pouring into downtown when I was doing that. And we want our downtown to come back, obviously, and be like it was. But there just seemed to be way less traffic, but tons of people walking downtown.
Yeah.
I stopped at the Over the Rhine Kroger coffee bar. It parked kind of over there. I had some green tea on my way home. And so that was nice too. You don't have to even go in anywhere, that walk-up window.
That's the Starbucks there?
Yep.
Yeah, that is great. That's awesome. So I haven't been downtown in a while.
We'll have to go for a walk when we do our podcast planning.
was it pretty... a ghost town?
Not a ghost town. I mean, there definitely was, some traffic, but it's not like it was. It just isn't. There would just, I was at a very busy intersection, like where the highway, comes meets downtown, and there just, you could cross against the light, which I did not do. But you know, I mean, that's when I was like really thinking like there's not that much traffic, because the idea that you could cross a light in any of those areas would, you would never think of that pre-pandemic, never, because it's so busy.
Huh, good stuff. I think that's a great idea. Pick different areas of the city and walk. I know you've been doing, you've been walking up in East Price Hill too. I think it's a really cool idea.
You know, a little bit of inspo from Mike Morawski, school board member, former guest.
I just get ready to mention it, yes.
So there's some inspiration there, and some of my other friends who are doing it, but it's a good way to start the day and not, like, spend the entire day in my guest room. Because there's
yeah, even,
like,
the
walking to City Hall now, or, you know, getting ready and, you know, being anywhere downtown. Like, it's easy to sit for hours on end, and that is not healthy.
Right. I'm happy to get out in my kayak, Sherry. You've as I mentioned last week, you've got me on to you've got me going on a new hobby, and as you well know, I need a hobby.
So you do. That's true. We work a lot.
You convinced me last summer to get a kayak, and I got it late last summer, and I finally got it out, and now I can't put it up. But anyway, thanks. If you missed last week's episode with Cincinnati Parks Director Kara Kish, go back and check that out. Sherry also had a good story on Cincinnati.com about what Kara talked about in terms of the idea of a resurrecting the plan, the project of a new downtown marina. And Kara said, hey, that project is not dead, and the planning is continuing with that. So check out Sherry's story on Cincinnati.com about that. Check out, obviously, the podcast on whatever platform you're currently listening to us on right now. So thanks so much, everyone, and we will catch you next week.